Good morning. Good Nev Shabbos. Last week, we began discussing Elu Velu Divrei Elokim Chayim. And we noted that one way of understanding this concept is the idea that there are multiple truths, that the different opinions given at Sinai reflect different perspectives. However, both of them truly and literally come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Meaning to say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai multiple possibilities, and he himself wasn't even Machriya, the Yerushalmi explains, and the Ritva explain. Rather, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Moshe the possibilities, and he said that the final decision is left to you, or the Chachamim Shebechol Dor Vador, to decide based on that which they see as correct. So, therefore, in reality, both opinions, both Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, are equally true. Both of them come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu equally. And the reason why we follow Beis Hillel is because Halacha Kerabim, and that is, of course, the normative psak, the halachas, you must follow him. Hashem said you must follow the majority position. But that doesn't mean that, in reality, Beis Hillel is not any more correct than Beis Shammai. According to this, we could understand statements such as the halacha will be like Beis Shammai Lasid Lavo, because in reality, both opinions are Dvar Hashem. Both opinions are MS. The second possibility, which we're going to begin with today, is a little more intuitive. And it basically claims that that's impossible. It's inconceivable that two opposing opinions could both be equally true, especially when they yield opposite conclusions. If one opinion says Tameh and one opinion says Tahor, then one opinion must be more correct or more true than the other. Of course, there might be an element of truth in both positions. There's a logic behind each position. Makoros and Rios could be summoned for each viewpoint. But nevertheless, in reality, one position is more MS than the other. So what is meant by Elu V'Elu? The idea of Elu V'Elu, according to this perspective, is the notion of halachic autonomy, meaning to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Klal Yisrael that when you have a dispute, the way that should be resolved is by putting it to a vote, and Acharei Rabim Lahatos, etc. The famous story of Tanu Shel Achnai is an example of this idea, in the sense that, according to, let's say, the way the Ran explains it in Drashos HaRan, Drosh Shvi'i, and others, the view of Rabbi Eliezer was, in fact, more MS than the view of the Chachamim. He was Mechaden El HaEmes Yoser, and that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu did those Nisim. In other words, the Nisim were not just because of Lechvodo, but the Baskol emanating and saying that the Halacha follows Rabbi Eliezer is a reflection of the fact that Rabbi Eliezer's standpoint is Karov El HaEmes. Why then do we follow the Chachamim? Because, like the Gemara says, Lo Bashamayim Hi, meaning to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Klal Yisrael the Torah. Ein Navi Rishai L'Chadesh Davar. Torah can no longer be determined through Nevuah. Matan Torah took place once in history, and the way in which we figure out what the normative halacha is through our own intellect. We use our seichel, we study the sugya, we come to the conclusions that seem true to us, and if that is the majority position, then that is the halacha. And that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to follow. And it doesn't necessarily mean that they're both equally true. Rather, as the Ran puts it, one is MS Yoser. Now, again, that doesn't mean that the other opinion isn't MS. Afal pi she'omrim MS, ein re'uyin lasos maisa kein b'divrei Torah kemo she'lo tiru bal machlokos v'shav lazer afal pi she'nitna leim baskol min hashamayim she'alacha kedvav. Another expression of this idea is to be found in the Hakdama to the Ktzos HaChoshen. Diyadua dish seichel ha'adam yil'el ha'sig ha'emes b'hiyos v'eret sharsho. L'ze amro, Hamalachim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ata Mevazeh Tachshit Shelcha. Kevan Shikar Abriya Avur HaTorah, Ve'adam Sichlo Anoshi, Me'anim Nala Siga Ames HaAmiti. Human beings, by their very nature, are unable and incapable of plummeting to the absolute truth. But nevertheless, it's Torah's Chesed, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave it to us, and He gave us the authority and the responsibility to interpret it according to that which we see fit. Now, the Ram then addresses an interesting question, which is, if it's possible that the Chachamim will come to error in their interpretation of the Torah, so then isn't there a fear that by following the Sanhedrin HaGadol, we will come to be harmed? And the way the Ran puts it is quite interesting. He says, we of course accept and believe that there's inherent value to the Torah and to the mitzvos. There are those perhaps who say, no, it's just following the will of God, Ratzon Hashem, obedience. But if we believe that there's inherent value to Torah and mitzvos, so we'll be harmed if we don't do what's the true MS. And the Ran gives an interesting answer. He says, well, it's true, but overall, there will be greater good in following the Chachamim and following the mitzvah of Lishmo al Chachamim than the harm that will be caused by doing what we think is correct, even if it is truly correct, technically speaking. Very similar to an answer given by the Chinuch, who says that, yes, it's conceivable that mistakes could be made, but if we didn't have a system of resolution, which depended upon the human mind, so then the reality would be much worse because everybody would be doing their own things. Other Rishonim give different types of answers to this question. The Ramban writes that there's a hashkacha and a siyata d'shmain ruach hakodesh. The Rashba very famously considers, at least in certain circumstances, the possibility of the idea that the Chachamim say almost to reform nature. But the Ran says no. The Ran says, practically speaking, you're still better off following the Chachamim, even though there is the possibility of error. So again, Eil v'Eilu doesn't mean both opinions are equally true. Both opinions are from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. One may be Emes, or at least Yoser Emes, but nevertheless, the Ratzon Hashem and the mitzvah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that which, of course, we should follow and must follow, is the majority position, following the guidelines of resolving machlokas. Yes?
What does it mean the other one is less true, but still true?
What I think he means is that there is a logic behind both positions. When Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argue about something, or the Chachamim Rabbi Eliezer, so each position has a logic, each position has makoros, there's a svara. It's not the case that there is no truth to the other position, but it's also not this case that they're equally true. Now, the third perspective on Eilu V'Eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim is a perspective that we'll see expressed in a number of thinkers. We'll see it in the Maharal and especially in the writings of Rav Kook. And that is the concept that things that seem to be mutually exclusive are in fact both simultaneously true. Let's first look at how it's expressed by the Maharal. This is on page 46 of your source sheets. He's commenting on the Gemara in Chagiga that describes the Chachamim is Bali Asufos, Elu Metarim, Velu Metamim. Perush. Ki efshar sheyadas ha-chachamim al derech echad. Vi efshar shelo yechiluch beinehem kefi ma shehem mechulakim besichlam. It would be inconceivable that there be no machlokas, because since people are different, and people think differently, k'shem sheparzufeim shonim kach deosehen shonim, therefore, it's inevitable that they will arrive at different conclusions. Ki kol davar v'davar, i'efshar shelo yeh b'china yoser me'achas l'davar achad. She'afim ha'davar tamei, i'efshar shelo yeh lo tzad b'china el tahara shel ma. Even if something is tameh, it will have an aspect of tahara. Things are not pure or black and white. V'chein, im adavar tahor. Yafshar shelo yalo b'china mashal tuma. Uvne adam mechulakim b'sichlam. Human beings differ in their seichel. There's a very beautiful expression of this in the Or Yisrael by Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who writes that the goal of Talmud Torah is to attempt to reach an unbiased application of the Torah, which is emes, which is objectively true. However, man, by virtue of his being man, lacks the ability to totally overcome his kochos hanefesh, his subliminal dispositions. And therefore, they become what Rabbi Yisrael calls sleeping dreamers. In other words, they're dormant, they're inactive, but they're always there. And thus, because ultimately he is human, his subliminal dispositions are within him, and he will never be able to get totally beyond those subliminal dispositions. It's a very psychologically nuanced approach. There's a lot of very fascinating insights into human psychology, of course, in the writings of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, and he's saying that humans are human, and our goal is to try to be objective as possible, to try and to attempt to the extent that we are able to get beyond our dispositions and to be honest and objective. But nevertheless, it's inevitable that as humans, we can never totally eradicate these subliminal powers from our psyche. That being the case, the Maharal writes, inevitably, there's going to be machlokas, because people don't think alike. And therefore, it should not surprise us. Remember, the Ber HaGolah is a defense against the questions that are typically asked. And here he's defending the Torah against those who say that it's invalid due to the fact that there's so much machlokas. And his response is no, it would be impossible otherwise. V'yefshar shiyiyu kol seichel b'nei adam al derech achad, kemo shiyisba'er. Ulekach kol achad v'achad mekabel b'china achas kefi chiluk sichlam. So therefore, each person gets or perceives a different element of the truth based off of their intellect. Ve'al zeh kara'am ba'alei asufos. So it's lomar shiyoshim asufos ve'oskim b'torah. She'af she'hem mechulakim b'sichlam mikol makom hem misasfim yachad. Thus the chachamim gather together despite their differences. V'kasher hem misasfim yeshlam kol adeos mechulakos. And therefore, by gathering together and debating the different possibilities and the different ways to interpret the Torah, between all of them, they'll arrive at the total truth. Rak l'inyan halacha l'maisa ein safik she'achad yoser ikar min hasheni. Of course, halacha l'maisa, one opinion is more ikar. So, again, we have the halacha l'maisa, and that, in that realm, yes, there is one opinion that is more true. However, in reality, each perspective sees a facet and an element of the truth. I think a very, very strong makor for this perspective on Elu v'Elu can be found in the Gemara in Gittin on Vav Amud Beis. The Gemara is on page 47. And the Gemara tells us that there was a dispute between Rabbi Avyasar and Rabbi Yonasan. What exactly the husband in the story of Pilagish Begiva found that made him so upset at his wife that caused her to run away, or his Pilagish that caused her to run away, and ultimately brought about the tragedy that was the story of the Pilagish Begiva and the subsequent civil war. We know that he got angry at her. Mikan, by the way, that of course a person should never get angry at their wife. Anyhow, so he got angry at her, but what was it that he got angry at? So Rabbi Avyasar says, Zvuv Matzalah. And Rabbi Yonasan says, Nima Matzalah. Either he found a hare or he found a fly. So Rabbi Avyasar one day finds Rabbi Eliyahu Hanavi and asks him, what's going on in the Yeshiva Shalmala? And Eliyahu responds, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is learning the sugya of Pilagesh Begiva. And Rabbi Avyasar says, well, what is HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying? And Eliyahu responds, Avyasar b'ni kachu omer, Yonasan b'ni kachu omer. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is quoting the machlokas between Rabbi Avyasar and Rabbi Yonasan, to which Rabbi Avyasar responds, Chas v'shalom umiyaka sveika klape shemaya? Surely HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what happened. How could you claim that God is unsure? To which Eliyahu Anavi responded, Elu v'elu divei Elokim chayim. Zvuv matzah v'lo hikpid, nima matzah v'hikpid. So what does that mean? That initially he found a fly. He was very aggravated and upset to see a fly in his food, but he held it in. And when he found the nima, he could no longer hold it in, and he blew up, and he yelled at his pilagesh. And that's what precipitated the whole story. So, who's right? The answer is both are right. How so? Well, it depends on how you define the word cause. What caused him to get upset? Do you look at the initial cause, or the primary cause, or do you look at the cause that ultimately led to his being angry? It's like if I ask what caused the camel's back to break. Do you say it's the 100-pound bag of flour that was on the camel's back, or do you say it was the straw that was put on top? Well, depending on what you mean by cause, both of them are correct. The primary cause is one thing. The final cause is another thing. Just like if I ask you what was the cause of World War I, you could probably give 17 different reasons, all of which are correct, depending on what you mean by cause. And so, both of them are true. Now, when Rabbi Avyasar was initially told that both of them are correct, he thought this was impossible. Meaning to say that from the perspective of Rabbi Avyasar, the two possibilities were mutually exclusive. Either he was right, or Rabbi Yonasan was right. But it was impossible that both were right, because from their limited perspective, either it was one or the other. It was impossible, as far as they could tell, that both were correct. But of course, in reality, both were true. Both were correct. There was a missing detail, a missing condition, that prevented them from understanding how both of them could be correct. The same thing could be true with respect to other examples of Elu V'elu Divei Elokim Chayim. Both positions are true. And while it's certainly the case that from our limited and finite perspective, the two positions seem to be mutually exclusive, as far as we could tell, it's impossible that they're both true. If we know a little more, if we can see that missing detail, then we are able to see how both are true. So Elu V'elu Divei Elokim Chayim does indeed mean that both are MS, similar to what we saw in the Yerushalmi and the Ritva. But it doesn't have to mean that they're both literally said by HaKadosh Baruch Hu and HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe to choose them, though we could say it that way as well, but rather there's something missing that if we understood, they would both be true. Just to give another example of this, at top of page 48, Tosfos in Rosh Hashanah deals with the dispute concerning how, when the world was created. And Rabbeinu Tam says, Elu v'elu divrei Elokim Chayim, v'kol ha'meimar de b'tishrei ala b'machshava livrius, v'lo nivra ad nisan. Meaning to say, both positions are true. B'tishrei nivra ha'olam, b'nisan nivra ha'olam. How could they both be true? Either one is right and one is wrong. The world wasn't created twice. No. When we use the term nivra, nivra could take on more than one connotation, especially klapei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Nivra could be referring to the physical creation or could be referring to the ala b'machshava. So it's conceivable, I think, according to Rabbeinu Tam, like we said, that the Balei HaPlugta did not necessarily see the both positions as compatible. As far as they were concerned, both positions were mutually exclusive. But when a person comes to a deeper understanding of the truth, then they could see how both are true. The Rav Dessler writes on page 48, Keshechazal omrim deo shonos binyane agada, he distinguishes perhaps between agada and halacha, though you need not necessarily do that. Hare kulon miiros oso nose mitzdadim shonim mebchinos shonos veinam mechulakim. Be'etzem, they are both true, and they're just looking at the same truth from a different perspective. But one is not necessarily more true than the other. Now, I'll see there's a lot of questions. I'll take some questions. We're going to try to explain this a little more. It's a difficult concept, and we'll see that Rav Kook really develops this idea. Yes?
So, those two examples are both Machlokes and Metzius. I know that's the point of that.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to Stirim Sak, like one person says us, one person says us, how is that possible that we're just missing one?
Is it with the situation?
So one possible way is to say, yeah, maybe in this situation this is true, in this situation the other is true. Maybe we would limit it to Agada or Metzius or the like, but maybe it's also just like Rabbi Yosar and Rabbi Yonasan weren't able to see how both are true, but both were true. So that's a reflection of our limited mind. Maybe under certain conditions it's Tameh, and under certain conditions it's Tahor, and both are correct. They're not correct in a way that perhaps the Bali Plugta conceived of them, but they're part of a broader truth, and I think that's what the Maharal is getting at. Yes?
How is this different than the Ritva's?
It's not necessarily different. It's similar to the Ritva in the sense that they're both equally true. And if you wish to put it together with the Ritva, you certainly can. I classify it a little bit differently just because the way the Ritva's perspective is that they are, or at least allows for saying, that they are both true, but they're incompatible. And the Halach Lamaisa, therefore, is determined by what the Rove is. Whereas what we're saying here is that in reality, it's not just that they're both true, but they're compatible.
This would be a much better way. I mean, if this were Halach, this would be a much better, easier way to understand.
Correct. Exactly. And that's what he might mean, indeed. Yes, Sammy.
People were saying about how Machlokas and Maharal about Machlokas is inevitable. Isn't that sort of against the way we were, I mean, at least the Rambam with the Kavita
Yes.
Also,
I agree. In other words, I do think it's a different perspective, and I think that the Rambam's perspective, as you're suggesting, is that yes, there is a single truth that if you really know how to use the tools perfectly, you'll arrive at. And what the Maharal is saying is, no, that's not true. Because man, by his very nature, could only see part of the picture, part of the perspective, and therefore, inevitably, the differences within man will yield different conclusions. Yes?
It may have been asked just, but you feel like, let's say, we're comparing when there's 17 causes of a war, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Is that saying that each of them is lacking something, but combined they present the whole truth?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But that's different than, I mean, it's funny to me, but it's in that when you say something is usur and mutter, that's incompatible versus...
As far as we could tell, it's incompatible. But the story of Rabbi Avyasar and Rabbi Yonasan tells us that even things that we see as incompatible, that the Bali HaPlugta thought is incompatible. Rabbi Avyasar was certain that if he was right, Rabbi Yonasan was wrong. And if Rabbi Yonasan was right, he was wrong. But in reality, they were both true. So we can't always see how Asr and Mutter are both compatible. Now, again, how is that conceivable? Perhaps a missing detail, or a missing condition, or the like.
Supposed to be comparable to
I think that we could apply the same idea to halacha as well, though I think the point that a number of you are making is correct. It's easier to see how it applies when it comes to certain types of dispute than when it comes to others. Another point that the Gemara in Chagiga here on the bottom of 48 is very relevant. We won't read it together inside, but it talks about how it's important to, when one encounters dispute, as the Gemara says, "Asei oznecha ke'afar cheses," meaning to say, make your ears like a hopper and try to go ahead and understand the various perspectives. A number of thinkers use the following analogy to understand Elu ve'elu de'elu kim chayim, which I think fits very nicely with the idea we're suggesting. I saw that Rav the Ali Shur in volume 2, page 520, uses this analogy, and Dr. Lamb does so as well in one of his essays, that you can, a physical analogy to the notion that we're suggesting is wave-particle duality, meaning to say that when we measure or try to determine the nature of an electron, we get mutually incompatible results. It's either a wave or a particle, seemingly, because something that is a wave can't be a particle. Something that's a particle can't be a wave. They don't work in similar ways. They're different. And yet, somehow or another, both are true. And the more we measure for one, the more we'll have certain results, and the more we measure for the other, we'll more have certain results. And somehow or another, wave-particle duality exists, such that it is both a wave and a particle. And while it's certainly the case that we can't figure out how both of those are compatible, somehow or another in reality, both are true. And this is an idea that we'll return to at the end of today when we discuss the Rav's perspective of ontological pluralism. But let's hold off for one moment. Another important point to bring out is an idea that Rav Dessler says, and again we'll see it shortly in Rav Kook on page 49, b'machlokas b'divrei Torah, machlokas l'shem shamayim, b'vadai lo b'mikre ba'u, v'ashem nitzav ba'ad askel, v'haya yachol l'hatos achras kulal nitzad achad, el l'kach haya b'rtzono yisbar shetia machlokas zu, v'elu v'elu divrei lokim chayim l'tzorach sivev shetia ha-machlokas. Meaning to say that it's not accidental that there is this dispute. It's not just the case that each one presents a differing perspective, a facet of a broader truth, but there's hashkacha such that at different times HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted certain perspectives to be revealed, and that is the case when it comes to machlokes. The Aruch HaShulchan, very famously, top of page 50, uses the analogy of an orchestra or a choir. We know that Torah is referred to as a shira, and when it comes to music, when it comes to an orchestra or a choir, the beauty is achieved when each instrument plays something a little different, different notes, different tunes, and each one individually is incomplete, but when taken together, it creates something beautiful. And the same thing with respect to Torah. And with this we'll turn, for most of the rest of today, to the writings of Rav Kook, who develops this idea, and this concept very much informs his worldview and his hashkafa with respect to not just the understanding of Torah, but also how to relate to the world in general and to relate to people with whom one disagrees. If you take a look on page 50, the Gemara famously says, "Amar Belazer, Talmidei Chachamim Marbim Shalom Ba'Olam Shenemar V'Chol Banayach Lamudei Hashem Rav Shalom Banayach Al Tikri Banayach Al Banayach Al Banayach." Rav Kook starts by noting that it's a little strange that we say Talmidei Chachamim Marbim Shalom Ba'Olam, because after all, Talmidei Chachamim are Marbim Machlokes Ba'Olam. Everywhere you look, there's a machlokes. Every daf of Gemara has a dispute. How could you say that they're Marbim Shalom? After all, there's so much machlokes within the realm of Talmud Torah. And Rav Kook writes that people make the mistake and they confuse uniformity with peace. Or they confuse peace with the absence of war, with the absence of dispute. If everybody's saying the same thing, if everybody's doing the same thing, then there's peace. But Rav Kook writes that's not the true definition of peace. Shlemus and shalom are related. And to achieve shlemus, one has to see all of the differing perspectives and all of the conflicting viewpoints. And as long as you only see one facet, then you're seeing only a partial representation of the truth. And that being the case, in order to achieve shlemus, there needs to be machlokas, because as we said before, inevitably people only see a limited perspective. As human beings, we're only capable of seeing one side, or two sides, or three sides of an issue, but not its entirety. So it's only through machlokas that true shalom could be achieved. Haribui shalom hu sheyisra'u kol hatzdadim v'chol hashitos v'yisbaruru eich kulam yesh lahem makom. It's only through the presentation of the different perspectives and the different viewpoints that shalom could truly be achieved. Kol echad l'fi erko mikomo u'minyano v'adirabah gam ha'inyanim hanirim kim yusarim o kisosrim yiru kishemizgale amitas ha'chachma l'chol tzdadeha shirak al yedei kibbutz kol ha'chalakim v'chol ha'pratim v'chol ha'deos ha'niros shonos v'chol ha'miktsoos ha'chalukim dafka al yadam yireh or ha'emes v'hatzedek. And we find this very much in our own learning. If all we had was the Rambam, and we didn't have the Ravid, we would have an incomplete understanding of the sugya. And likewise, if all we had was the Ravid, it's only because we have the Rambam and the Ravid, it's only because we have Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, that we're able to arrive at a much truer, a much more complete understanding of the truth. V'das Hashem yir'aso v'ahavaso the Or Torah's Emes. Meaning to say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very broad, and we as human beings are naturally narrow and small. And therefore, for us to see the Emes of Torah, which is the Emes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we need to see the differing perspectives, and that could only be achieved through Machlokas. Al Kein Talmidei Chachamim Marbim Shalom Ki Bameh Sheheim Marchivim umivarim u miyaldim divrei chachma chadashim bifanim mipanim shonim shiyesh bahem riboy v'chilok inyanim bezeh heim marbim shalom. It's a little reminiscent of the Ran in Drashos who describes the Gemara in Krisos concerning the Chalbana. The Gemara says that one of the ingredients in the Ketores is the Chalbana. The Chalbana is something that on its own has a foul smell, but it's necessary to be included. And the Gemara there says that Mikan l'kol tainis she'ein imo po she Yisrael she'eino tainis. That's why, of course, at the beginning of Yom Kippur, we lift any excommunications, that it's mutar lehispalel imha varyanim, so that our tainus on Yom Kippur includes all the elements. And the Ran says that's because each person, with their own natural proclivity, adds something important to the mix. And even if it's something that on its own is something that smells bad, as it were, it's not necessarily something positive. But when put together and when added to the mix, it contributes, and it adds, and it makes it smell even better. In other words, yes, the Chalbana on its own is foul-smelling, but when included in the Ketores, it adds to the aroma. And Rav Kook continues, V'rav shalom banayach, lo amar gadol shalom banayach, shehaya more al tzir guf echad gadol, she'az hayu advar matimim lo'oso harayon ha-miduman. If it said gadol, it would be like that false impression that peace comes from a lack of disagreement. Shashalom hutsarich dafka ledvar machadim v'shinoi rayos. No, people would think that uniformity is peace. Shezeb emes migareya koch hachachma v'rchavas hadas. Ki ur hadas tsarich latzeis l'chol tzadav l'chol hapanim shel ora sheyeshbo. Aval hariboy hu rav shalom banayach. Al tikri banayach elabonayach. Ki habinyan yibaneh mechalakim shonim. Just as a building is built from various different things, there's wood, there's cement, there are bricks, there are metal, and they all together form a single building, so too a building made out of only bricks is going to be weaker than a building made out of multiple things, a building where everybody is uniform. is going to be weaker as well. Va'emes shel or ha'olam tibanem mitzdadim shonim u'mishito shonos she'elu v'elu divrei Elokim chayim. If you take a look on page 51, this is a letter that Rav Kook wrote. Here he's responding to someone who said, I don't know what you're talking about, Rav Kook, when you talk about achdut hafachim. Achdut hafachim means the unity of opposites. In other words, multiple truths. There are things that are opposites, but they're both true, and they both merge to create the greater truth. And the person writing the letter to Rav Kook said, I don't understand if they're opposites, if it's Tameh and Tahor, so those are opposites. And opposites can't be true simultaneously. Like you were asking, how could it be both Tameh and Tahor at the same time? Rav Kook responds, V'tmihani v'chilazu anu tzrichim, halo ikar hatzad shel chidush shebedivrei Torah, hu ma shemitzad ha-machshava ha-elyona ha-sokeres es amkom shel dvarim ein b'mitzius klal hafachim. From our small, finite, limited perspective, indeed, there are opposites. But from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's all-encompassing perspective, there is no such thing as opposites. V'chol makom shiyesh hafachim, yesham bevadai eze tenai ne'elam. Like we said, whenever you see opposites, it's because there's a missing detail, a missing condition. This is, of course, reflective of a very important concept that Rav Kook stresses in his writings. Philosophers like to refer to it as panentheism. Not pantheism. Pantheism means that everything is God. Panentheism is the idea that God exists in everything. That God interpenetrates every part of existence. And this is a reflection of an idea that's found and stressed in Chassidus and comes from Kabbalah, Ein Ot Milvado, Les Asar Panui Minei. You see this theme very much in Sefer Tanya, for example, the idea that even evil is not a true reality. In a certain sense, it's an illusion. However, Rav Kook puts a very positive perspective on this insofar as he believes that goodness can be found in everything. The Ari writes that one of the purposes of Galus is to capture the nitzotzos that are spread about through the Shivim Umos and the Shivim Lashonos and the like. In other words, there's a spark of goodness in everything, and that has to be realized. And the fact that it looks like it's evil, and from our perspective there is no makom in it, is because to some degree we're not able to perceive the whole picture. In the next passage, Kol kidei shekol achad ve'achad yitpatech b'miluo v'tiyeh hasgula ha-miyuchedes shel kol achad mechotva b'chol prateha ma shehakiruv hu mitashtesh u'mekalkel hakol. This is a fascinating idea. Rav Kook here is writing, very much working off of the ideas from Reb Tzadok, that the development and the evolution of Torah requires that to some degree different perspectives be pursued exclusively. For example, the Rambam did a tremendous service for Judaism by showing how the entire Torah could be understood entirely from a rationalist perspective. That a person can be a good Jew, even the greatest Jew ever, while at the same time not accepting anything that they're not able to understand. And that's not to say that that wasn't a precise way of putting it, but while taking an entirely rational perspective on everything, there's no need for mysticism. And thus, for that perspective, for that truth to be revealed, it was necessary for someone like the Rambam and other rationalists, those great Jewish thinkers who flourished at that time, to take that perspective. Because even though, in a certain sense, the truer perspective is someone who could go ahead and say, yes, there's emes in rationalism, there's emes in mysticism, mysticism reflects a different perspective and a certain higher perspective. but they're both true in Elu v'Elu Divrei Elokim Chaim perspective, which is indeed the perspective that Rav Kook himself takes. But if everybody took that approach where everything was always true, so then the rationalist perspective could never have been fully developed and fully realized. So it was necessary for the Rambam, and here we refer to the idea that we discussed earlier, that in the development of Torah there's hashgacha. So it was necessary for the Rambam to adapt an absolutely rationalist perspective and to reject mysticism entirely in order for this perspective on Torah to be fully developed. Because it never could have been fully developed had the Rambam, as it were, simultaneously accepted the mystical perspective. But we, living after the Rambam and after the Maimonidean disputes and after the Ramban, etc., could go ahead and look at all of it and say, yes, there is an emes in the Rambam and in the Ari and the Ramban, and it's all emes. It's all Elu v'Elu Divrei Elokim Chaim. But for that to develop, it was impossible for the broad perspective to be reached. Rav Kook writes very powerfully in this next source. This is a response to the approach of Zev Wolf, or Zev Yavitz, I'm sorry, who wrote primarily that, and there's, if you look at the footnote here, there's a brief article from Encyclopedia Judaica about him. Rav Kook was responding to his perspective on the Rambam. And essentially, certain academics take the approach that the Rambam was primarily a non-Jewish philosopher. Now, chas v'shalom, everybody agrees the Rambam was Jewish. But what they mean to say is that the Rambam was essentially trying to reconcile Greek wisdom and philosophy with the Torah. And he was coming from an outside, external perspective and trying to show how the Torah can be reconciled with that foreign concept. And therefore, it sometimes sounds apologetic and stretched, and in a certain sense, it's not fundamentally Jewish, at least his philosophy. And Rav Kook writes, this is fundamentally wrong. The Rambam was kulo Torah. Now, Rav Kook didn't think that the Rambam didn't study Aristotle. Only a fool would argue that. But, as we'll see, Rav Kook develops that the Rambam was entirely imbued with Torah. And his perspective on Jewish thought emerges and emanates truly and absolutely from Torah. You see, Rav Kook writes that academics have a difficult time dealing with the Rambam because on the one hand they see this great philosopher, on the other hand they see this great halachist, on the other hand they see this great communal leader, and they are confused. There's this person with a split personality. He's bifurcated, and therefore inevitably they play up one element of the Rambam at the expense of the other. So he was truly a philosopher, and his positions in halacha did not reflect his true beliefs, and he wrote them for the masses, v'chulei v'chulei. Says Rav Kook, chas v'shalom. That perspective is just a reflection of your inability to see things from a broad perspective. Because you're narrow, so you see the Rambam in narrow terms. But the Rambam, in reality, was very broad. The Rambam saw no contradictions, not because he was apologetic, but because they're both MS. And therefore, your misunderstanding of the Rambam is because you have a very narrow understanding of the Torah. His defense of the Rambam is actually quite reminiscent of the Ramban's famous defense of the Rambam. Ramban, of course, vehemently disagreed with much of what the Rambam said philosophically. And Rav Kook's personal tendency is very much mystical and not rationalist. But that doesn't present that doesn't prevent the Ramban from seeing the godless of the Nesher HaGadol. The Ramban begins his defense by saying that the Jews of Teman were so grateful to the Rambam for saving them that they added to their Kaddish b'chayechon v'yomechon v'chay Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon mimoshe lemoshe lo kam kemoshe. And those who don't see that, this reflects their smallness. We'll just read from the underlined. B'dorosenu v'kama dor shelefanenu sheshaktu haruchos v'shimesh hatzdaka shel Rambam parsha pirsha es ora al pnei kol ofek hayahadus. In other words, in the generations following the Maimonidean controversies, everybody accepts the godless of the Rambam. There's no one that doesn't learn Rambam. Perhaps there are those who don't learn the Morah, but there's no one who doesn't learn the Rambam and doesn't realize and recognize the Rambam as a gadol. Nichnas gam amora bechal sifrei hakodesh shehem kinyanei haTorah v'chalilo lanu linog bo minag shel zilzul. The Mor Nevuchim is also from the Sifrei HaKodesh. V'chovosenu ayom lo rak ladun es dvarav l'kaf zchus. Our job is not just to, you know, be miyashev. Ki im gam lihis amek bahem ulim lemitzvos es midosav betur midosah shel Torah. Kimo begufei hilchosah shel Torah yesh nam panim shonos v'chilukei deos. Just like when we learn halacha, we see their differing perspectives. They're chilukei deos, and we could say elu v'elu. V'anu noagim l'kayim bahem es midas haTorah shel aseos nechak afer cheses u'shma divrei hametarim v'divrei hametamin. So just like we learn the shitos of Beis Shammai, Medisola, and the Rambam and the Ravid, so too we have to study the Morah. Divrei hamizakim zivrei chayvin, divrei haposlim zivrei hamachshirin. Mipnei shekulan nitnu meiroa echad. Just like the different shitos all come back to Moshe Rabbeinu HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so too the Mor Nevuchim. Afal pishal inyan haloch lemaisa yesh nachra miyuchedes lachas minadeos kach mida zu atzma noheges behalachos hilchos adeos veamunos shehelu chachme Yisrael hamuchzakim leavos hauma gedoli atorah veanshei hakodesh vechalila lanu lahakel rosh negdam ulahachlit al achas mideoseim shehem dvarim chitzonim chas v'shalom to say that the Rambam is somehow external. V'shem nidchim migvul Yisrael, v'kal v'chomer shasu linog minag zeh neged deosav shel aviyam shel Yisrael, ha-me'ir enei hadoros b'toraso, chachmaso, kdushaso, Rabbeinu Rambam zal. V'gam be'ilu, top of page 52, hadeos, asher anu motziim shirabim mechachme hadoros cholken aleihem. Even when it comes to his positions, that we find that the majority position throughout the generations was against the Rambam, Yecholim anachnu rak lomar shehinenu muchra'ei muchra'im lahachzik b'hadeo sherov gedole Yisrael natu aleihem. Aval chas lanu lahachlit al deosav shel Rabbeinu agadol shem deos chitzonios chalila. V'achareish Rabbeinu Rambam shetoras Hashem haisa mekor chayav. Matzas levavo neman laHashem ulisoraso v'imo be'elu adeos halo davar zeh hadavar be'atzmo hu atzad machria she'en v'hen davar shiuchal lahatil tina b'leiv o lidchos es mi shehu mikdushas haTorah v'kdushas Yisrael. Someone so absolutely imbued with Torah and Kedusha like the Rambam was could not possibly be tainted by the foreign influences that he studied. It was kulo Torah, and everything that he considered was viewed entirely from the lens and the perspective of the pure Torah. V'achra b'zeh, hi nesuna lefi ha-matzav ha-nafshi, v'tfisas ha-tziurim ha-ruchaniyim, shel kol achad lefi tchunaso, v'akol lefi mashu adam. Ein shum safek sheyeshnam anashim shedeos miyuchados pulasam aleihem.
Certainly it's the case that certain people naturally tend more towards one perspective and they are more attracted to the mystical perspective, for example. And that's fine. Let them study mysticism. And if the Rambam doesn't speak to them and they can't understand it, so they don't have to study the Mor Nevuchim. But chas v'shalom to be motzi laz. And the broader the person is, the greater he'll be able to see and the more that he'll be able to see. It's a little reminiscent of the Rama in Tshuva. It's quoted here in the footnote. The Rama writes, that this is a defense to attack by an attack by the Maharshal. The Maharshal yells at the Rama for quoting Aristotle and quoting philosophy, and the Rama responds that, first of all, I actually think that studying Kabbalah is a lot more dangerous than studying philosophy. And the Rama was, by the way, a person who incorporated both elements into his writings. And he says, the truth is that I only study philosophy on Shabbos and Chol HaMoed when everyone else is going on Tehillim, so I study philosophy, it's not, and I study the Morning Ruchim, I don't study Aristotle in the original, and it's not the Iker, it's not the Keva. But we see other thinkers that held that these differing perspectives can be incorporated. And then he continues, and he writes so powerfully how when you see how the Rambam was overwhelmed with his passionate love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like the Rambam describes the true Ohev Hashem, someone who is infatuated with God, how could you possibly say the things that you are saying? We have just a couple more minutes left to this topic. However, I was asked to stop early today, since President Joel is speaking next. So we will begin a new topic next week, but perhaps for the first couple of minutes we will offer some concluding remarks, and I wish you all a wonderful Shabbos.